from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, presented by Oxbow. Oxbow, with special guest David Cobb from CBS Sports, live on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The first of our Monday, Wednesday, Friday hits with David Cobb from CBS Sports, college basketball and college football writer for them on X at David W. Cobb. You've heard him plenty of times on these airwaves, but now he's going to be an absolute regular. Jeff Calkins will be Tuesday and Thursday, but Cobb has Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Cobb, what's the word, man? How's it going?
Well, I just learned that I've got homework for Connor Dunning, from Connor Dunning, which is I need to find a song to be introed with.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are the early candidates?
Well, actually, in the last 60 seconds of the break, from when he called me to when we got back on, I already sent him Lil White from OxyContin from Lil White. So.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'll have some editing to do on that one.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that
it might
tells
just
the people
be,
who you are?
It might
do you think
just be silence. Yeah. From how many words I have to cut out of that song. So it might just be nothing.
You think that's a good show of who you are, OxyContin by Lil White?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's okay, here's the deal with that song. It's like when I'm on the golf course and I just really need to get in the right headspace.
Oh, really?
I just bump that, and then okay. I'm good. And then I'm throwing darts, you know, pretty much from there.
Well, so. that seems like a off-the-tee driver song. Like, you just got to get pumped up to hit a 300-yarder right down the middle. I don't know if that's a good iron. I don't know if that's a good laying-up song. You're going for everything. You have that song on.
And you also got to be selective about, like, where you play it. Like, if you happen to get on at Southwind, you know, you can't really bump that. But, you know, if you're at the OP9, Overton Park, right? Like, it's fair game. It's fair game.
Yes. So. Now, here's the other thing. I don't know if Connor told you. It could be different every day. It could be different every single Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Or do we want Connor gave me the finger
like
wag. He wants
yes.
a consistent song.
Yeah. Maybe. How about this? Like, maybe we could do like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday song. Maybe you could hit me with three.
Oh.
Okay. I like that. That's good.
That seems fair.
That's more homework, but I'll figure something out.
Okay. All right. Well, David Cobb on the program. Let's start here. You ended up tweeting this out last night, and I think I'm there with you. I see some people within Grizzlies Twitter doing the whole, like, oh, Mike's playing with the Timberwolves. Once he comes back and retires his jersey, we'll give him his time of day. But it would be, as you said on X last night, it would be nice or cool to see Mike Conley as an NBA champion.
It would be. It was cool to see Marc Gasol get it done, and it would be just as cool, if not more cool, to see Mike Conley get it done, because Mike Conley is stuck in the league into his late 30s, which is really impressive to be his age playing at that level on a team that's now, you know, down to the Western Conference Finals. And it would also reflect well on the Grizzlies, too, because, you know, one thing that I think really stuck out to me when I was covering the Grizzlies was that they traded Marc Gasol to a place where he could go and win a title. And the Grizzlies also traded Mike Conley to a Utah Jazz team that was competing. And so you remember when Andre Iguodala didn't want to suit up
right.
for the Grizzlies, and it was this whole big thing, and it was like, oh, the Grizzlies are terrible for holding him hostage or whatever. And it was like, no, are you crazy? It's the Warriors who are at fault here. They're the ones who traded this multi-time NBA champion, former All-Star, to the Grizzlies. They could have traded him to another team that was contending and let him end his career in dignity, but they traded him to a team that was in the tank at the time. in the Grizzlies. And so to me, that reflected poorly on Golden State, not on Memphis. And then you look at Memphis's track record of what they've done with their stars, and they've traded them to places right. where they could go out in style.
Right.
And so I think it bolsters Memphis's reputation and the Grizzlies' reputation if Mike Conley goes and wins a title, even if it's not necessarily with the team that, you know, that they traded him to.
And I'll say this too, with the Timberwolves, he was out in game 5 and they got smacked around by the Nuggets, and that's why the Nuggets won 3 straight games, but obviously when he gets back on the floor, 2 straight wins. Jokic ended up after the game saying Mike Conley's the most underrated player in the league. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know if I can fully disagree with that. Like, the box score is not going to tell you that he is a huge impact player. But when you just watch the games, he's so damn impactful. Like, slowing down their offense, getting everything situated. He only had 3 turnovers in 6 games in that entire Nuggets series. He might be one of the most underrated, if not the most underrated players in the league when you look at it.
And I think he's the perfect sort of sidekick for Anthony Edwards, because you've got this young energy with Anthony Edwards, this star power, this dynamic personality, and you can sort of balance that out a little bit with a Mike Conley
right.
in a really good way. Like, I think every young player needs that sort of veteran around them, and you know, and shoot, let's give Slo-Mo his flowers
true.
Too. I mean, Kyle Anderson, he's not playing a ton, but he's in that rotation and contributing for Minnesota. So yeah, I've been Team Minnesota throughout, because I mean, we all love Mike, even if you're. You know, even if you're in that camp of, well, he's still an active player and he's on another team in our conference, like, you can't tell me that if you're a Grizzlies fan and you've been a Grizzlies fan for any length of time, that it wouldn't bring a smile to your face to see, you know, Mike Conley with an NBA title ring. I mean, I think that would be fantastic.
And it does kind of, it brings a smile to my face when I see he's got like a different handshake with everybody on the team. That wasn't really the Grizzly style with the grit and grind era, but he's figured it out. Now, with that, Timberwolves versus Mavs, Western Conference Finals should be fun to watch. I don't know where to lean. I think Timberwolves slight favorites here.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting matchup because of what the Timberwolves do with sort of the contrarian, you know, multi-big lineup. Not sure anyone thought that was going to really work
right.
when they first went out and got Rudy Gobert, but here they are. It seems to have worked out fairly well. So, yeah, it should be a fun series. I love the fact that we've got some fresh blood in this Final Four, if you will, of the NBA playoff. I mean, obviously the Celtics have been serious contenders
right.
for quite some time, but I mean, you got Indiana as the 6th seed out of the East with, you know, they don't have any of the top 20 paid players in the league on their team. And, you know, you look at who's representing the West, and, you know, it's kind of the same deal. I mean, I think I saw a statistic the other day that that I think Rudy Gobert is the only top
yes.
15 player in terms of salary.
$41 million a year.
Yeah, and the other 14 of the top 15 highest paid guys in the league are on the sidelines. And so I think it to me sort of signifies that we're reaching a generational shift in the NBA, and the high dollar star power is a lot of it is 30 plus now. A lot of it's 32 and up now. The Splash Brothers are on their way out. LeBron's on his way out. And with that, you've got some new faces. And to me, that makes it more interesting because
yeah.
I don't come to the NBA anymore, but I'm going to watch this playoffs just to sort of see this new generation sort of take the stage.
Well, the NFL has always had the parity, and I think the NBA has been trying to chase that parity for years, but now they have it because of the new CBA and the luxury tax blankets and how hard it is to keep guys on your roster. And Connor and I were talking about this. I think a good example is Bruce Brown from last year with the Nuggets. Maybe he's getting paid, you know, $8 million with them, but he has such a damn good playoffs that here come the Pacers or whoever it is. I think it was the Pacers this offseason, paying him $20 million, $25 million per year. It's hard to keep people on the same team that are great role players to keep that same team chemistry going forward. You have to have your same pillars, but then you have to surround those guys after every single season. Now, I want to bounce this off you real quick before we move on to the Group of Five coaching rankings that we talked about last time you were on the show. They finally published on CBS Sports for those that haven't seen it. But what do you make of the conversation where Anthony Edwards has ingratiated himself to just about every fan in the NBA at this point? And I love Anthony Edwards. I always really have. I think he's a really good player, good personality. He's fun to watch. But I think there's a lot of people that sort of have done the, well, Anthony Edwards has lapped Ja Morant as a face of the NBA. He has completely surpassed them. What do you make of that conversation?
Well, okay, let's hold on a second with that, because
right.
Ja Morant's hardly played basketball over the last year. So sure, if in this moment you want to gauge the popularity of the young rising stars in the NBA, in this very moment, Anthony Edwards is going to be ahead of Ja Morant. But let's not forget, you know, who Ja Morant has shown us to be, you know, during his time in the NBA, and who he's going to resume being here in just a few months. So I think once we get to November, December, and January, all that stuff works itself out, assuming, of course, that Ja Morant stays healthy and, well, stays out of trouble. I think that takes care of itself, because he is just as, if not more, electric and just as impactful on winning, if not more impactful on winning than Anthony Edwards is. And so, I mean, with, you know, we could be headed towards a really fun sort of rivalry there, you know,
right,
in the Western Conference between the Grizzlies and the Timberwolves. So, no, I mean, I wouldn't go there. If you're,
right,
if you're a prisoner of the moment, then sure, I mean,
yeah,
of course, like Anthony Edwards, what he's been doing is phenomenal, but let's not pretend like Ja Morant doesn't have all that more, you know, in the tank.
Yeah, and here's the thing. What it does for me watching this, because I don't relate everything back to the Grizzlies like a lot of people do in this market, but what it does for me is it just highlights, I think, even more the missteps that Ja Morant had off the floor that led to the Grizzlies season this year, seeing Anthony Edwards now in the Western Conference Finals. But that, I mean, Ja Morant's 24 years old. Like, there's plenty of time for him to make up ground and be who he is supposed to be. It takes some good tidings off the floor, you know, keeping your image clean, and then doing what we know he can do on the floor. It's not that complicated. Now, I want to move on to these group of five coaching rankings in college football. Before we sort of dive into the names, how freaking hard was this to do? I know you probably had some voting. I don't know if you did them strictly by yourself or you had some input from some of your colleagues at CBS Sports. How impossible was it to rank these coaches?
Very difficult. There were around 10 of us who put our heads together, did ballots on the group of five coaches, which that's 66 coaches in total.
Right.
And the tricky part about it is a lot of them are new and they're from the FCS ranks. So, like, how do you calculate or evaluate somebody who's made five straight FCS playoff appearances but is showing up as the coach of a lower-tier Conference USA program? Like that, it's hard to evaluate a coach like that, even if their record historically may be 85% win percentage. Well, you're bumping up to the FBS now, and you're in a lower-tier job in a lower-tier conference. Like, so that's, you know, it's going to be tough. I would say that about the top 15 to 20 were relatively easy, and the bottom 10 were relatively easy. But, Gabe, there was a ton of variance between, like, 20 and 50, because it's basically just, you know, which 7-6 MAC coach do you prefer?
Right.
and it's kind of difficult to differentiate between them in that realm. But you know what? If you hadn't mentioned it already, I'll break it here. Ryan Silverfield came in at number 13. Which I thought was a pretty good ranking for him among the group of five coaches. And I think definitely impacted quite heavily, as it should be, you know, by the fact that Memphis is coming off of a 10-win season.
Well, I mean, if he does what is expected of him and this team does what's expected of them this year, he could probably break a top five going into next year when you redo these rankings, right?
Without a doubt. I think if Memphis, if they win 10 games again, Ryan Silverfield's a lock to reach the top 10 of this ranking next year. I think the contract renegotiation would help ensure that he is still, you know, at Memphis if they have another 10-win season. And, you know, let's not pretend as if there aren't some discussions about more than 10, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I know that the schedule's not easy. Like, they have some relatively difficult AAC road games. They go to Florida State. Like, this is not an easy schedule. But in a scenario where you make the AAC title game and you make a bowl game, you know, you could get to 11 or 12 wins in that scenario, which would be among the greatest seasons of Memphis football history all time. And so, yeah, I mean, if you get to 11 or 12 and you have back-to-back double-digit victory seasons, absolutely. You're talking about Ryan Silverfield as one of the top five coaches in the group of five. So I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility, you know, that he can make a jump like that.
Yeah, now the top five, Liberty, you have Jamie Chadwell at one. Tulane, you have John Sumrall, even though he's taking over at Tulane this year, at number two. UTSA, Jeff Traylor at three. Jeff Tedford at Fresno State at four, and then Troy Calhoun at five, which it's impressive what Troy Calhoun does every year. What really jumped off the page for me, though, when you just go through this, the differentiation in the coaching ability in the AAC at large, because I think in your bottom 10, you have Trent Dilfer at UAB, Stan Drayton at Temple. Let's see who else you have here. Biff Poggi at Charlotte. There is a big differentiation in coaching ability within the AAC from top to bottom.
Absolutely. Yeah, some of the absolute best group of five coaches are in the AAC, and some of the worst are in the AAC as well. So it's quite the mixed bag there. But I mean, the one that kind of hops off the page to me, who I think is like a real rising star in the industry, is Alex Golish.
Yep. Him at 15.
South Florida. Yeah, and I had him in the top 10 of my ballot. So I had, you know, I had Jeff Traylor from UTSA at number two on my ballot. I had John Sumrall going to Tulane at number three. I had Silverfield at 19, so I was just a touch right. lower on him than our consensus, but I still had him in the top 20. And then I had Alex Golish top 10 as well. So those were the four from the AAC that I had, you know, kind of in that top 20 sort of range. I also had Jeff Monken, which I forget that
oh yeah
Army,
yeah he yeah he's in there.
I forget, like, Army's in the AAC right. now, which is super random. But how do you
think that's going to work for them when they get into the AAC? I know it's not a strong conference by any stretch of the imagination, but I just don't the issues that are going to plague all the service academies going into the next 5-10 years, I can't get over that.
Well, I think, you know, if you want to look at an example of how it can be done, I mean, Air Force has stayed strong in the transfer portal and NIL era. And a lot of that is a credit to the continuity and the system of Troy Calhoun there. I mean, the thing is, you don't lose a ton of transfers from the service academies. When you do, it hurts because it's basically impossible to replace them. But I think once we get done with the COVID year, and this year is going to be pretty much end of guys who have the COVID year, I think it puts the service academies closer to level footing again. Because as it stands now, you don't get the fifth and sixth year guys playing for the service academy, yet they have to play against teams that have all these fifth and sixth year guys. And so I think once we get through the COVID year stuff, I think there's a chance for Army and Navy to sort of get back on steadier ground. And so, I mean, I'm of the opinion that Army is traditionally going to be among the more stable programs. Now, stability doesn't always translate to, like, high-level success, but, I mean, I think Army could kind of plod along in the AAC as a 7-5 sort of team. I mean, that's sort of what they've been under Jeff Monken. They make a bowl, you know, two out of every 3 years, and you know, that's sort of par for the course for them. And I think they can continue to do that in the AAC.
Yeah, we've always talked about, though, over the years, do you think anybody in the Power Four will ever go down that road with a Troy Calhoun or a Jeff Monken if they're lower level, you know, of the Power Four, and they're just trying to switch it up and find something that works for them, you know, a Vandy of sorts? Like, do you think that that's ever going to be in the books?
I mean, I think it should be. I think it should be.
I've always been there. I just look at a guy like Jeff Monken. He's been trying. I mean, that seems like a guy who's a good program leader at the very least.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're at a disadvantage talent wise, you got to zig while everybody else is zagging. I mean, look, there's a reason all these purported clones of Nick Saban failed, because they came from the Nick Saban coaching tree, and then they went to a place that didn't have the talent or the resources of Nick Saban in Alabama, and they tried to replicate what Nick Saban in Alabama had done with less talent, and it didn't work. And sometimes when you go to a place that...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
That's under-resourced and doesn't have the talent, you got to do something different. And, I mean, look, Paul Johnson went to Georgia Tech and won double-digit games with them on multiple occasions running the triple option. And since he's left, I mean, what sort of success has Georgia Tech had? Very, very little. And so I think there is some merit to that. But at the end of the day, though, it's hard to sell tickets to see the triple
option. That's true, yes. And it's hard to sell recruits on playing the triple option, too.
It is. Yeah, exactly. And you got to recruit a unique type of player for that. And I think it's easier to marry those two things, like at a service academy where it's very regimented and disciplined and team first. And, you know, there's all these sort of unique cultural, you know, things that go with playing at a service academy that sort of lend themselves to running a unique system like the triple option. Not sure I see it happening, though, at a Power Four, you know, type of establishment. And I think that's probably why you've seen really successful service academy head coaches struggle to get Power Conference jobs. Because once you sort of lock yourself into a scheme or a system, it can be really hard to sort of break that vision that everybody has in their head of sort of who you are as a coach.
Yeah, now, a Power Four, you did the coaching rankings came out for CBS Sports as well. Late last week, into the weekend, and those are interesting. You mentioned Nick Saban. It's a lot harder to go ahead and rank these guys with Nick Saban out of the game. Now Kirby Smart, I think, is the guy that should step into that role of Nick Saban and be sort of that next guy who has just this consistent program, churning out NFL players, recruiting his ass off, always being in the college football playoff. Now he's at number one. Number two, Ryan Day, and I think the first sentence of the write-out here from CBS Sports: I'm not the only one who finds this mildly humorous, am I? No, absolutely not. I feel like Ohio State fans can't stand the guy at times.
Yeah, how about this? Yeah, the number two coach in the entire Power Five, according to CBS Sports, is legitimately on the hot seat.
Right.
I mean, because if Ohio State fails to beat Michigan and doesn't at least make the national title game with everything they're bringing in, I mean, Ryan Day is going to be—he's going to be feeling the heat, like in a really serious way. So, I did not have Ryan Day at two on my ballot. I thought that was way too high. I had Kalen DeBoer at number two on my ballot, and my man came in all the way at seven in the final rankings, which blew my mind because he was incredible at Washington.
Right.
He took over a dumpster fire at Washington, and in year two had them playing for the national title. I mean, that's insane. Like,
yeah.
So to me, it was. I thought Kalen DeBoer got disrespected in this ranking a little bit because I'm just not there with Ryan Day. I mean, I think he's a good coach. I had him pretty high, but I mean, he's not the second best coach in college football right now.
Know who always comes through, and it's like I've seen a lot of coaching rankings, and he came in at number four. Brian Kelly, he's sort of the wild card in this day and age of college football. He could definitely put himself up to a higher spot if he gets LSU back to complete title contention. And I think he can, compared to the last two guys who won titles, Les Miles and Ed O, he should be able to do it.
I mean, yeah, no doubt. I mean, this thing is as fluid as it's ever been. With Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban out of the equation and Jimbo Fisher, you know, he's another national title-winning coach who's no longer in the game. It's up for grabs. It kind of almost at this point reminds me of the coaching transition we've seen in college basketball, where Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski and
yep. You
know, some of these other legends of the sport have sort of departed and paved the way for a new generation. It sort of feels to me like we're at that moment right now in college football, and Kirby Smart is clearly atop the heap. But I mean, look at this ranking, Gabe. Get Dabo for all the crap that he catches. And for as much as Clemson has slidden, or I don't know if that's a word,
yeah.
But
yeah.
For the slide that Clemson is on, for Dabo Swinney to come in at number three, I mean, geez, that tells you something sort of about the state of coaching right now at the Power Conference level. And so I think there's a real opportunity for a handful of coaches to rise up and crack that top five. You know, one of them that kind of comes to mind is Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm keeping a big side eye this year on Lane Kiffin because mm-hmm. that feels like outside of Georgia and Texas, really, like that could be the third, it should be in the college football playoff, in my opinion, based on the roster they're returning and what they have on that roster in general.
No doubt. There's three from the SEC who kind of stick out to me when I look at this ranking in terms of guys that could make a 10 or 15 spot jump in the season ahead. Lane Kiffin is one of them who I think is too low at number 14. I think he's a top 10 coach right now in the Power Conference ranks. And then a couple more would be Eli Drinkwitz. I mean, if they stack another big season after what they did a year ago, I think he's got a chance to cruise into the top five. And then, I mean, let's see how good Nico ends up being. But if Tennessee is able to kind of get back to who they were with Hendon Hooker at quarterback a couple of years ago, then Josh Heupel's gonna just go through the roof in this thing. So, I mean, right now it's the coaching industry and coaching profession, it's up for grabs. Because when we're talking about Ryan Day and Dabo Swinney at 2 and 3, I mean, come on. Like, we got to find something better than that. Than what they've given us, to kind of pair there next to Kirby Smart at one.
And then what I do love is in the top 15, you have my two favorite coaches, I think, in college football in general, because they do the most with the least, Chris Klieman and Kyle Whittingham. Kyle Whittingham, I believe, you have really high at 6, and then Chris Klieman there at 13. I think there's a limit to what they can do at their current stops, and really there's a limit to just their systems. Right, ball control, not being that great on the offensive side of the ball, just running the ball, possessing it. There's a limit to that. But those two, man, I have unrealistic amount of respect for what they do year in, year out at their programs.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, when you are up against the most well-resourced programs in the country and you consistently produce, 10-plus wins as a bona fide underdog, then, yeah, I mean, like, what Kyle Whittingham has done is unreal. Same goes for Lance Leipold. And it kind of shows that, like, you can land a coach who's maybe in the twilight of their career, and that's kind of like the time to get him, like Lance Leipold. And I'll take it one step further. Chris Klieman, at Kansas State, that both those Kansas coaches right now are guys in their 50s, mid to late 50s. They're sort of on the back end of their career. They're not necessarily looking to make that next big jump. They're just happy to win where they are, and there's something to be said for landing a coach who's in that stage of their career. And yep. The Big 12 is going to be a free for all without Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, there's going to be 7 or 8 teams that feel like they have a chance to win the Big 12 this year, and Kansas and Kansas State definitely going to be among them.
And I'm sure Oklahoma State will find their way in with Mike Gundy into the conversation somehow.
Oh, well, if there's a conversation, Mike Gundy's going to be a part of it.
He's always going to be in it. It's crazy.
He's a man.
What
he's 40.
So. Oh, yeah, he is. He sure is. He sure is.
More like 58 now, but yeah.
And they might have the most under-talked about superstar going into next year in Ollie Gordon at running back.
Yeah, right? Good call.
Seriously. No one talks about that guy. He ran for what, 1,500? I mean, he was ridiculous last year. He was their entire offense.
And when you hang on to a guy like that in this era, that's special.
For
like
sure.
That's big time. So he's getting paid, but he deserves it, man. Yeah. So the Big 12 is low key going to be really fun. Like, obviously, you lose Texas, you lose Oklahoma, you lose some of the national eyeballs and national attention. But I think the Big 12 is going to be like the new Pac 12 after dark. So, like, if you want chaos, the Pac 12 provided that for a while. It's done now. I think the Big 12 is going to be our new sort of. Content source when it comes to enjoying like late night sort of wonky chaos in college football.
And that's when I'm up watching the games cover to cover. But David, I appreciate it, man. We'll talk again on Wednesday.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer at CBS Sports. He's on X at David W. Cobb. And of course, David Cobb is brought to you by Oxbow every single day. I'll tell you about them when we have more of the Gabe Kuhn Show coming up after the break.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Could you tell where my head was at when you found me? Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Xander Schauffele put the finishing touches on the PGA Championship at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky this weekend at 21 under. I thought that last on 18, if I was watching that at the very end, hit one off to the left, into the rough, had to stand in the bunker, the ball way above his feet, good layup, and then he went up and down and got the birdie to get over top of Bryson DeChambeau, who, of course, was roiding out at the at the driving range while all that was happening. This weekend, though, this stat just really blew my mind. Let me roll down to it really quick. When you look at the past of the PGA Championship, lowest combined score to par by the field for the PGA Championship in their entire history. In third place was plus 59, 2018 Belle Reve. 1995 at Riviera, plus 40. This weekend ended up lapping those, I don't even know by how much. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't even want to do the math right now. But 2024 Valhalla, lowest combined score to par by field in PGA Championship history, minus 214. The closest was 1995 Riviera at plus 40. They absolutely owned this course. In good conditions, relatively easy the whole weekend, so that was nice for them. But damn.
Everybody played for Scotty.
I guess so. Shout out to Xander. You know, remember the PGA Championship by Scotty, who I think he got his initial arraignment delayed to June 3rd. So he's going to have to be dealing with this one. Can I be honest? I really hope this just gets dropped and we can move on with our lives. It's ridiculous that happened in general.
Did you see that the police officer's body cam was conveniently not turned on?
Why? Come on.
What's the point of them if they're not on?
Yes. Good God. What are we doing here? That's absolutely ridiculous. That makes me mad.
I hope his pants are okay.
Also, Mystic Dan will not be getting the Triple Crown. He's out of it because we have a horse by the name of Seize the Gray who won the 149th Preakness Stakes this weekend.
If I didn't know that was a horse, that would have been a crazy transition to make. Like, just out of nowhere. Mystic Dan, by the way, is this? Yes.
Yes.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah, it was not like the Kentucky Derby, though. Derby was phenomenal. And by the way, I get anxiety watching horses run on the dirt track when it's that rainy. I get damn real anxiety for an accident to happen. But it looks like Seize the Gray won by about a length. So it wasn't even close. We had to buy a nose. We had a photo finish of three separate horses.
It was the ending of cars.
In the Kentucky Derby, it was. But Seize the Gray won the 149th Preakness Stakes. Now, on to the NFL, because I think there's a few different storylines seeing OTAs start that are worth following. Let's start with the no-shows. One, Justin Jefferson is a no-show to Vikings camp. And to me, I don't know how they can't get this done. You have a rookie quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. You want to surround him with everything he could possibly have going into his rookie year and you know, potentially being a good quarterback for you for the future, and you're not going to pay your star wide receiver, the guy who caught for 1,600 yards 2 years ago, first-team All-Pro, Offensive Player of the Year. What are we doing? J.J. McCarthy needs all the help he can get, and if Justin Jefferson is going to be a no-show, if there's a potential holdout, you're completely hamstringing yourself in a new era with a new quarterback under Kevin O'Connell. It's just strange to me.
It's a no-brainer. Pay him. Pay him. Arguably the best wide receiver
in the NFL. And I say the same thing about CeeDee Lamb,
yes,
too, with the Cowboys. I don't know why they take so long, because you know what happens, right? Salary cap and the number does not go down. It goes up by 20 to 30 million a year and even more, depending on how far. It could go up by 40 million in the next couple of years.
I don't understand.
You're
these
just
going
to have to end up paying him more based on a percentage of the salary cap. Do it now. Get ahead of it. You see the best teams in the NFL do that. You need to do it as well.
I highly recommend Kyle and Chris Long have a podcast out there where they talked about, you know, teams doing this and not paying their stars. And specifically, they talked about the Dallas Cowboys, and they called it. They were like, man, when you really look at their team, it might end up being spoiled milk because they're messing around and letting these guys walk. And CeeDee Lamb goes down with an injury. All of a sudden, that wide receiver room looks thin. And, you know, Dak Prescott, you haven't given him money yet.
And know what you do is you breed mistrust.
Yes. Yes,
in the organization.
It's like, why would the Vikings do this when you have a rookie quarterback that needs arguably the best receiver in the NFL?
Like,
give him his money.
Because all of these guys who get, you know, they make all pro teams, they win Offensive Player of the Year, they're asking on the back end, they're like, have I not given you enough? Have I not shown you enough that I'm worth the money that you're supposed to be paying me? You breed mistrust with an organization at that point, and that's when people start asking for trades.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. I just do not get it in the slightest. Now, on the quarterback front, worth mentioning, we do have Trevor Lawrence showing up. That's going to be fine. It looks like he'll get 50-plus million. 50-plus million on his next contract. And the Jaguars are committed to getting that done. I will say this, though. As much as I think love Trevor Lawrence as a prospect and a potential face of a franchise, he didn't show me much last year. After a really good year, winning a playoff game, not making the playoffs last year and having a statistically down year, I have to ask questions. It was with almost the exact same team. I have to ask questions about who he is as a player going forward. That $50 million, I think he's going to be due that. That is what it is. I don't think he'll be at the top of the market, but he'll be close. But Trevor Lawrence, I think, has got to prove more to me before I really buy into him as a Super Bowl winning quarterback or a franchise-changing quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, and it felt like in that division, too, like it was for the taking. And then all of a sudden, CJ Stroud showed up and said, it's mine.
And then we have Tua Tagovailoa. He ended up showing, even though he did sort of threaten that he wasn't going to be there, he's going to be the next quarterback to get a big payday. They're still in negotiations. I'm curious what that contract looks like. Last year, he stayed healthy and was really good in the MVP race. But historically, he has not stayed healthy. And he's got a slight build, and you have to have questions about that. And then you also have to ask yourself the question of, yeah, Tua Tagovailoa has been good, but look at his wide receivers. Look at what we've built for him. You have Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, two of the fastest wide receivers in the NFL around you. You have a really good offensive mind and Mike McDaniel drawing up plays for you. How much do we factor that in into negotiations and how much we ultimately pay Tua?
What tier do you think the Dolphins are in the NFL? Are they true contenders, or are they just below it?
I think they're,
or maybe two tiers below.
I think they're two tiers below.
Really?
I think they're a wild card capable team who can maybe win one playoff game, but after that, their lack of running ability and their defense, they lack edge rushers. They're not that tough. They need to be more tough and rugged. I just don't buy into them. Like when you're talking about the AFC, talking about the AFC North, you're talking about the Chiefs, like some of these teams that'll be left can really punch you in the mouth. And I don't know if the Dolphins have that ability about them yet. And I think this is going to be, and if the, I don't think we have many Dolphins fans out there in our listening audience, but at the same time, I think this is going to be a bridge year for them where you've had to let go of a few guys. We're still going to be solid. We can be a wild card team. But then the year after that is when we're trying to get into that championship window, that full championship window. So I think this year will be more of a bridge year for them, whether they end up getting a wild card spot or they're just outside of it. But I think they'll win some games this year. They'll be solid. But I don't think they're a contender in the slightest. And then the final one, Rashee Rice. He showed up to OTAs. He's there. And the Chiefs aren't keeping him away from the facility or anything with his ongoing litigation. I mean, he has an assault charge that he's wanted for. He had the hit and run earlier in the offseason with Dallas, in Dallas, before the NFL draft. I mean, the fact that he's at OTAs is kind of telling. Are the Chiefs going to try to sweep this under the rug and let him play this year or what? And they also are having a tough situation, too. They had two offensive tackles this weekend get arrested for possession of marijuana, which, to me, I sweep under the rug. But with everything else going on with Rashee Rice, it's just like, stay out of the headlines for, like, 3 days at a time.
Right.
And then we can move forward
as
a franchise.
The Chiefs PR person's like, really?
Like, come on, man. Help me out. Help me out a little
They're
bit.
They're like, it's the offseason.
Yeah, but the marijuana, like the possession of marijuana, it's like, come on, man. It was a misdemeanor possession, too, for two separate guys, two offensive tackles that it reserves. Wanya Morris being one of them who went to Tennessee at one point or another. I didn't take it that seriously, but stay out of the damn headlines.
They should have swept that under the rug.
Stay out of the damn headlines for a couple of days. Chiefs, you're coming, you're trying to three-peat. This type of these distractions don't help in the offseason. I don't think it's going to hinder them going into the season, but try to stay out of the news.
It doesn't help.
Try to stay out of the news. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though, and we'll come back and wrap up hour number two with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, Cannes Film Festival is going on right now, and this is today's edition of Small Talk is, you know, it's about billionaires not being as smart as a lot of people think they are. But we know that Dan Snyder is a dummy. He's a guy who had to sell the Washington Commanders, previously the Washington Redskins, over because of how much he went through sexual misconduct allegations, everything going on behind the scenes with the Washington Redskins, then Washington Commanders. He funded a movie, though, that's going to debut at Cannes Film Festival called The Apprentice about Donald Trump. He thought, though, going into it, that he was funding propaganda about Donald Trump, and he thought it was a pro-Trump film. It turns out now that he's seen the first draft of it that it's anti-Trump, and he is trying to get out of it at this particular moment. It's going to star Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Strong. Jeremy Strong, of course, of Succession. But it will depict at one point Trump raping his ex-wife, Ivana, and it will show him to be violent, and it's a complete anti-Trump film. And apparently Snyder told, an insider told Variety that Snyder's furious about the film, and his lawyers are working to block its release with a desperate cease and desist letter, and he might skip the premiere. It's not going to work that way.
Oh,
it's going to go off
He's
as planned.
He's not going to be there.
It's going to go off as planned, but what an idiot.
What are they going to do without Snyder at the premiere?
So he funded this thing thinking it's pro-Trump and didn't even look at the script.
Just
didn't even
all
bother
time dumb rich boy idiot move.
Oh,
if
God.
Only they wrote a script before they allow you to invest.
Oh, wait, they do.
They do. They tell you what it's about.
What an idiot.
But he's always been a moron. This is not surprising in the slightest. But let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll be on to hour number three. We'll have the Blitz at 6:30. But coming up next, let's get into some NBA draft, NBA playoffs, a little bit of college basketball with my guy from Sports Illustrated, Kevin Sweeney, and how much we ultimately pay to him.
What tier do you think the Dolphins are in the NFL? Are they true contenders or are they just below it?
I think they're
or maybe two tiers below.
I think they're two tiers below.
Really?
I think they're a wild card capable team who can maybe win one playoff game, but after that, their lack of running ability and their defense, they lack edge rushers. They're not that tough. They need to be more tough and rugged. I just don't buy into them. Like when you're talking about the AFC, talking about the AFC North, you're talking about the Chiefs, like some of these teams that'll be left can really punch you in the mouth, and I don't know if the Dolphins have that ability about them yet. And I think this is going to be, and if the, I don't think we have many Dolphins fans out there in our listening audience, but at the same time, I think this is going to be a bridge year for them where you've had to let go of a few guys. We're still going to be solid. We can be a wild card team. But then the year after that is when we're trying to get into that championship window, that full championship window. So I think this year will be more of a bridge year for them, whether they end up getting a wild card spot or they're just outside of it. But I think they'll win some games this year. They'll be solid. But I don't think they're a contender in the slightest. And then the final one, Rashee Rice. He showed up to OTAs. He's there. And the Chiefs aren't keeping him away from the facility or anything with his ongoing litigation. I mean, he has an assault charge that he's wanted for. He had the hit and run earlier in the offseason with Dallas, in Dallas, before the NFL draft. I mean, the fact that he's at OTAs is kind of telling. Are the Chiefs going to try to sweep this under the rug and let him play this year or what? And they also are having a tough situation, too. They had two offensive tackles this weekend get arrested for possession of marijuana, which, to me, I sweep under the rug. But with everything else going on with Rashee Rice, it's just like, stay out of the headlines for, like, 3 days at a time.
Right.
And then we can move forward as
you know,
a franchise.
The Chiefs PR person's like, really?
Like, come on, man. Help me out. Help me out a little
They're
bit.
They're like, it's the offseason.
Yeah, but the marijuana, like the possession of marijuana, it's like, come on, man. It was a misdemeanor possession, too, for two separate guys, two offensive tackles that it reserves. Wanya Morris being one of them who went to Tennessee at one point or another. I didn't take it that seriously, but stay out of the damn headlines.
They should have swept that under the rug.
Stay out of the damn headlines for a couple of days. Chiefs, you're coming. You're trying to three-peat. This type of these distractions don't help in the offseason. I don't think it's going to hinder them going into the season, but try to stay out of the news.
It doesn't help.
Try to stay out of the news. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though, and we'll come back and wrap up hour number two with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, Con Film Festival is going on right now, and this is today's edition of Small Talk is, you know, it's about billionaires not being as smart as a lot of people think they are. But we know that Dan Snyder is a dummy. He's a guy who had to sell the Washington Commanders, previously the Washington Redskins, over because of how much he went through sexual misconduct allegations, everything going on behind the scenes with the Washington Redskins and then Washington Commanders. He funded a movie, though, that's going to debut at Cannes Film Festival called The Apprentice about Donald Trump. He thought, though, going into it, that he was funding propaganda about Donald Trump and he thought it was a pro-Trump film. It turns out now that he's seen the first draft of it that it's anti-Trump, and he is trying to get out of it at this particular moment. It's going to star Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Strong. Jeremy Strong, of course, of Succession. But it will depict at one point Trump raping his ex-wife, Ivana, and it will show him to be violent, and it's a complete anti-Trump film. And apparently Snyder told, an insider told Variety that Snyder's furious about the film and his lawyers are working to block its release with a desperate cease and desist letter. And he might skip the premiere. It's not going to work that way.
Oh,
it's going to
no.
go off
He's
as planned.
He's not going to be there.
It's going to go off as planned. But what an idiot.
What are they going to do without Snyder at the premiere?
So he funded this thing thinking it's pro-Trump and didn't even look at the script.
Just
didn't even
all-time
bother
to- dumb rich boy idiot move.
Oh,
if
God.
Only they wrote a script before they allow you to invest.
Oh, wait, they do.
They do. They tell you what it's about.
What an idiot.
But he's always been a moron. This is not surprising in the slightest. But let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll be on to hour number three. We'll have the Blitz at 6:30. But coming up next, let's get into some NBA draft, NBA playoffs, a little bit of college basketball with my guy from Sports Illustrated, Kevin Sweeney.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.